explodes.
What was your mindset when you stepped in the batter's box?
Go yard. I mean, I'm a pitcher. Why not swing as hard as I can?
He was so worked up, he vomited on the sideline and then just kept on yelling at his teammate, Steve.
Coach, Minshew mania, the mustache sensation has taken over Pullman.
Well, I don't know. I don't even think he had a mustache when I recruited him. I don't recall.
If becoming a sideline reporter for ESPN didn't make me popular, this thing did. I've been getting offers for it all day long.
All right, guys, here we go. We're going to have one team, one heartbeat. All right, now we're going to play for each other. We're going to have a challenge back. We're going to win this ball game. One team, one heartbeat. Here we go, coach.
That might be the best sideline report in the history of sideline reports.
Welcome into week one, I guess season two, of the Sideline Cast podcast as we get ready to start the 2021 college football season. We are going to talk all things ball. We cannot wait to get this season underway. Allison Williams, Chris Budded, and Molly McGrath with you as always. And yes, we had some games last weekend, week zero, if you will. I know I'm probably the same as you ladies. It was so nice to just have football on TV, to hear the fans back in the stands. There's so much excitement, I feel like, this year, especially after the way everything was last year. So we're going to talk some of the specific games that we'll be covering this weekend, and then just kind of what we're most looking forward to this season and what we think the themes of 2021 will be for the college football season. I have to say, ladies, I feel like there's chaos coming. I just feel like this year, shit's going to get crazy, and I'm here for it. There's so many teams that have question marks at quarterbacks, like the perennial contenders, the ones that just reload year after year, whether it's Clemson or Alabama or even in Oregon out west. I think there's so Ohio State, right? Like all kind of some question marks, some newbies breaking in at the quarterback position, which I think could lead to some chaos across college football. I'm hopeful for that. I think we need some parity. Molly, what do you think will kind of be the theme of 2021?
Well, ESPN's theme, I think, is kind of cool. The whole welcome home theme that we're going to be embracing this season, with fans returning to the stands, the fact that, you know, we're still in the midst of a global pandemic, but we're getting a little more normalcy surrounding us with fans back in the stands, a lot of people, you know, vaccinated, things like that. I think that that's going to be a really interesting storyline. How normal can we get back to? You know, how much are we going to be able to see things that are normal during this college football season? And I do agree with you, Allison. I think there's going to be a lot of chaos. I think there's a lot of changes with some of those blue blood programs, like the teams that we always talk about being in the college football playoff, like the Clemsons and the Alabamas and Ohio State. Those teams are all going to look wildly different this year. So I think that's going to be really exciting to see. And I'm pumped, you know, week one to be able to see Alabama, the defending champs, to see guys like Bryce Young. You know, he's only completed 13 passes in college football. So to be able to see him and how different this team is with him and a new offensive coordinator, I think that's going to tell us a lot. Like, I think that Alabama is the preseason number one for a reason, and they are one of those teams that constantly reloads. But in order to attempt to repeat, which is really hard to do in college football, it's going to be on Bryce Young, I think. So yeah, quarterbacks are a really good theme of this season.
I think it's funny, Allison, you say chaos, because like we haven't had any in the last 4 months or so with
a different kind of chaos.
Realignment. I mean, just let the chaos continue. I actually think it will too. And we're going to talk about our four playoff teams in here. And I have a surprise one because I think that that's how the season is going to go, because there are a lot of quarterbacks who haven't had a lot of reps, and there could be some early upsets early in the season. I'm the same with Molly, like the idea of like just being in a packed house. I'm covering Michigan this week and they're selling t-shirts. It's like, we're back, with like the attendance number of the big house. So to feel like that sort of energy. I'm also excited to see, you know, what happens with teams like that are always like right on the cusp that could potentially break through to a playoff. And Iowa State, can they continue that momentum? A Cincinnati, the way that their schedule sets up, who is going to be like the dark horse that takes down, you know, someone in that top five?
So who's your playoff team who you think I'm getting to it too soon, but you said that you have a playoff team that you think is going to make it. That's a little out of left field. Who is it?
I think it's Cincinnati.
I knew it.
Yeah. Wow. Because I love it.
I know I got into an argument with my husband about this in the car. He's like, there's no way the playoff committee puts them in. And I said, but here's the difference with this. They're starting at 8. So even if a team were to, you know, lose below, you know, like, there's only so many more spots for people to jump, and no one's going to jump them with a loss. And the way that their schedule sets up out of conference, Indiana and Notre Dame back to back. So I think if they can beat those, that would jump them up. And then unless anyone else like goes undefeated, like, you know, unless the top five go undefeated and then that, you know, kind of knocks things out. But I just think the experience they have with Desmond Ridder, the way that the schedule sets up, their preseason ranking, this could be the year.
Yeah, and they're one of the few schools that don't have a question mark at quarterback with Ridder coming back, right? So you're coming off a 9-1 season. You have the success of last year that puts them in that preseason top 10, which is crucial going forward for a group of five team. I'm with you, Chris. I think this is, if there's ever an opportunity and a year for a team from the group of five to break in and get into the playoff, I think it's Cincinnati this year. Again, because they have consistently built a winner with Luke Fickell there, and they have, you know, they have their quarterback, they have the strength of schedule with Notre Dame and Indiana. I'm with you. I think Cincinnati's got a good shot. And then I think this could be the year too that a team from the Pac-12 gets in. And I know what? Everybody, I do. I'm telling you. I know everybody.
Wow. West Coast bias.
But here's where I'm really going to throw one at you. Most people would think it'd be Oregon, right? I don't know. I think it could come from the South, and I think it could be USC because of the quarterback. Keaton Slovis, you guys, is a freaking stud. He completes 70% of his passes. He's got his offensive line back. I just feel like this is the year that USC could really come back, and Slovis is a big part of that. Oregon, look, their defense is going to be ridiculous. Like, Kayvon Thibodeau is going to be an absolute star in this sport. Just wait. Like, come Heisman time, he's going to be the one everybody's talking about. But Keaton Slovis and what this offense has been doing the last couple of years, I just really think that this could be the year Pac-12 gets back into the playoff, and I don't think it's going to be Oregon. I think it's going to be USC. And the beauty of being wrong on this is, like, who cares?
What do you want us to say? Well, I think it's going to be Georgia, Clemson, Ohio State, Alabama, and, you know, like, get a ticket, your shot early.
I like the kind of different perspective there, because not a lot of people are picking USC to make the college football playoff. That would undoubtedly save Clay Helton's job, since his seat has been hot the entire time he's been coaching at USC. People are always wondering whether he's in or he's out. And I do agree with you, Allison. I love Keaton Slovis. I was there on the sidelines for his very first start, and he's the kind of guy who is unflappable. Like, he was a true freshman starting for the USC Trojans, you know, in a big moment, and he didn't seem fazed by any of it. He is so steady, so confident, such a stud. And the USC, the beauty of USC in a school like that is the fact that they always have really solid players in terms of their position players. So they always have incredible skill players, receivers, things like that. So he has a wealth of riches in order to, for their offense to get humming.
Do you have a surprise team, or I feel like you cover Alabama so much, you know them so well that you're going to slide Bama in there. Do you have anyone on the cusp who you think maybe?
I definitely have Bama in there, because I'm really excited to see how different they look this season. And I'm really excited for guys like Brian Robinson Jr. He was the number two back behind Najee Harris. I'm excited for him to get his moment. I'm excited for John Metchie, their receiver, to get his moment after, you know, Devontae Smith and guys like that leave. So, yes, like, shocker of the, like, this is my hot take that Alabama, I think, is going to be one of those final teams. I don't know. It's hard. I think this is maybe the year that a team like Georgia could get over the hump, because they have, speaking of Keaton Slovis came in and replaced JT Daniels, who suffered an injury, and now he's with Georgia because Keaton Slovis essentially took his job. So I think that with JT Daniels at Georgia and the fact that they have everything in place that they need in order to be successful, right? Like, they have the guys on defense. They have those skill players. It just depends on whether or not they have their quarterback in JT Daniels and whether or not he can, you know, take them to that next level. So I think this could be a year that Georgia could get over the hump. Another team that I think has, you know, been mired in controversy this offseason, but could have a good season. And it's, again, I hate to be unoriginal and talk about the quarterback so much, but I'm really excited to see Spencer Rattler this season. And, you know, you guys mentioned Iowa State and the fact that they have been hot and the fact that their program is garnering more respect and they have these veteran players. And that just helps with Oklahoma's strength of schedule, I think. And I think that that'll help Oklahoma overall to see some of those more difficult opponents. But I really like Oklahoma and the people that they have coming back. And I'm excited to see Spencer Rattler kind of take over this season. I think he could be really special.
I agree. Oklahoma's got, and I did Big 12 media days, and I asked Lincoln Riley about their defense, and I said, do you actually think that your defense may be better than your offense this year? Because he had alluded to it, and he goes, I quite possibly could be. So if that has been kind of the hamstring for the Sooners and never being able to win a playoff game, I think this is the first year that they finally win a playoff game.
I agree with that.
Who's your four? And then we'll get into week one. Who's your who are your four?
Wow, you're going to make me name four. Gosh, okay. definitely Alabama. I think Oklahoma is going to get in there as well. I like Georgia. I'm going to be one of those people that says it could be two SEC teams. I know.
That's true.
I like Georgia. I just do. I just have a feeling about Georgia. And then I think we're going to find a lot out about Georgia and Clemson this week one with their Georgia-Clemson game. I think that'll tell us a lot about, you know, is DJ Uiagalelei it? Is he legit? Can he be the real replacement for Trevor Lawrence that they need? This could be a down year for Clemson. I'm not sure. Like, I'm tempted to say Clemson, but I also could see them not doing much this year. So I'm thinking either Clemson or Ohio State, which I know these are the originals. But
yeah, commit.
Okay, fine. I'll say Ohio State is my fourth. I'm gonna kick Clemson out, which is like the ballsiest thing I can do here, I guess.
And so you had USC as one of them, right? Okay,
yeah. I'm going crazy here because it's more fun, and I probably am going crazy. So I'm going USC, Oklahoma. I don't want to. I really don't want to, but I'm going to go Alabama because Bryce Young is that good. So I know they're going to look different, but I'm still going Alabama. And I'm sorry, but Clemson. I don't think two SEC teams get in. I think Georgia loses week one. I think Clemson, who we love to underestimate, proves who they are once again. So those are my four.
Nice.
Mine are basically a mixture of y'all's with Cincinnati. So Alabama, Oklahoma, Georgia, Cincinnati.
You guys are way ballsier than I am. The fact that you have Cincinnati and USC in there. But I love it. I absolutely love to see that. And I hope that you guys are right, because that would make college football so much more exciting. The fact that there are only four or five teams that keep making it in every single season and every postseason, I think is bad for the sport. We need to have some more parity in college football. There needs to be teams outside of Alabama and Clemson that make things interesting. So I would absolutely love to see a Cincinnati sneak in there and kind of change college football history, really.
I would too. And I love Luke Fickell, so I'd be cheering for him all day. Let's get into the week one matchups, because there's so many good ones, obviously highlighted by that Clemson-Georgia matchup, which everybody's going to be watching. But you've got a good one, Molly, with Alabama and my Canes, who are, you know, quite the week one opponent in the defending national champs for the Hurricanes, who I think are going to have a good year. I'm super excited that Derek King is healthy and going to be able to play, and Cameron Harris is back, the running back position, and all that good stuff. So give me kind of what your main storylines are. And I know you've got two games this weekend, but we'll start with Alabama and Miami and kind of the biggest storylines going into that one.
Yeah, I'm so pumped for this Alabama-Miami game because there's so many storylines surrounding this game. First of all, like, last time that Alabama walked off of a football field, there was confetti on the grass and they had just won a national championship. So how do you follow that up? And talking to every single player that I talked to over the last couple of weeks, their goal is to repeat. And they know how hard that is. They know what it takes to do something like that. But they truly feel, I can tell that these guys truly feel that they can do that. And Nick Saban is able to do that and like create an edge with his players. Cause like you look at Alabama and you think there's no way these guys have a chip on their shoulder, right? They're the preseason number one, they're defending champs. They're probably sitting pretty and their quarterback's making nearly $1 million a year in NIL deals. And you know,
is that a real number?
I think that's a Nick Saban recruiting tactic because he said it. He said it, I think, on like at a meeting with a bunch of Texas football, high school football coaches, right? So that obviously that's a recruiting tool, but I do think he's making probably a ton of money as the starting quarterback for the University of Alabama. Your life changes significantly, right? You become a different person. Like you become, I don't know, you're just more, much more marketable. You're a superstar. Yeah. You're a commodity. That's the word I was looking for. He's a commodity now. So I believe he's making close to that. I think all of those players are probably making a lot of money with NIL deals, which good for them, whatever. But anyway, Nick Saban, I think it's interesting that he's able to create a chip on the shoulder of his players by saying to them constantly, like, this group has accomplished nothing. Like last year is in the past, and this is a completely different group now, especially headlined by Bryce Young, a quarterback who's very different from Mac Jones. He is shorter in stature. They say he's 6 foot. He stands like he's 5'10", 5'11". Allison, I know you saw him last year. He got some time against Mizzou at some point at the end of the game. And he's just a little more of a mobile guy. The easy comparison is a guy like Russell Wilson, right? Who's a little more elusive and slippery. So I think that that'll change their offense a little bit. And then, of course, Alabama loses their offensive coordinator in Steve Sarkisian. They lose their O-line coach. So now they have three former NFL head coaches on their staff, obviously, with Nick Saban. You have Bill O'Brien. You have Doug Marrone. So they have a wealth of knowledge. I think that they'll be able to, like, retool and do all the things that Alabama does every year. It's just whether or not Bryce Young is as legit as they say he is, which I think he is.
There's another team playing on Saturday, okay?
And also, now that I've talked about Alabama to death, even though I could get into so much more, you guys, I had like the best conversation ever with Brian Robinson Jr., their running back, who's like succeeding Najee Harris essentially as the number one guy. I'm so pumped for him. I'll just say very quickly.
Stop bragging about all the player phone calls that you've had. Because you know how many I've had?
Zero.
Zero.
What?
Go Blue. Because it's Michigan.
Oh, boo. I hate that so much. I'm really sorry for you. I mean, I'm like, people who, no one will be able to see this right now, but we're on a Zoom call. I'm wearing my son. And this is how I've been doing most of my player calls, with a baby on my lap or wearing my son so that he doesn't cry. So it's been a weird, hard thing to balance.
That will be most of the season too.
Which will be most of the season. I almost wish I didn't have all of these calls. But I'll just say this about B-Rob. I'm really excited about him because he's from Tuscaloosa. He has been waiting for this opportunity for his entire life to be the number one guy at Alabama. Like, this has literally been his lifelong dream. And he could have left so many other times, been the number one guy at so many other programs. So I'm excited to see him shine. But I think the biggest story of all this, like, okay, the two biggest stories of this game, Alabama coming off of a championship and Bryce Young. The other biggest story is De'Aaron King. And I am so excited to see him back on a football field after suffering that ACL tear in his right knee like 8 months ago. And they say the timeline for that kind of injury should be at least 9 months. And he's coming back sooner than a lot of people have been able to. He's so determined. And you just look at the struggle and strife that De'Aaron King has gone through in his life, losing his father unexpectedly, his mom's fight with breast cancer, tears his ACL. He's coming back. He's one of the super seniors coming back for his sixth year. And he wants to win a championship. Like, Allison, you've got to love this guy because he's hoping to bring a natty, home to, you know, Miami for your Canes. Like, he's just, and he's their best opportunity to do so. Like, you look at the quarterbacks that Miami has had in recent years, the kind of carousel of guys who've just been so-so, and De'Ara King is easily the one guy who has made a difference and who elevates this program so that they can compete with Alabama's and teams like that. And I do think that this is actually going to be a really good game. This isn't going to be a game where we're talking about someone studying equestrian equine sciences in the fourth quarter because it's a 30-point blowout. I think this is actually going to be a really good game. I think that Miami can hang with Alabama. It's just, well, it's a matter of they've lost a lot of edge rushers. They've lost guys like Quincy Roche, right? So they need to find who that's going to be for their defensive line, who's going to get after the quarterback. So I think that's the biggest question for their defense in general. But in the offense, you hate when it all hinges on one guy, but everything depends, I think, on De'Ara King and his health, his ability to run with the football, because he's so good at that. So if De'Ara King is back to who he was in special moments last season, I think that Miami has a good chance to make this a game. And what a great opportunity to get the defending champs week one. If they were to beat Alabama, they would be a lot of people's favorite for the title. So I couldn't be more excited about this game. I'll shut up now because I could literally talk about it.
No, I love it. I'm glad to know that the Canes made your preview, because the way it's shaping up from the national perspective, I don't think many people are giving them a chance. I was just looking, the spread at that game is 19 and a half.
Wow.
So yeah, I think as a Canes fan, this kind of reminds me of the Florida game a couple years ago, week one. And you're like, just go, can you hold your own? Keep it close, be competitive. We know that Alabama is the gold standard in college football. I mean, they have a dynasty. They don't rebuild, they reload. So everybody knows, like, realistically what Miami is up against, but I'm excited for this team. I'm excited year two with Rhett Lashley and what he's been able to do with that offense. And I'm with you. I can't wait to cheer on De'Ara King all season. So that game is at 3:30 on ABC. You'll be with Sean McDonough, Todd Blackledge, and Todd McShay. Chris, you're going to kind of, this is like my alma mater. You're going to my hometown kind of team, even though I was more of a Spartans fan growing up. I grew up just outside of Ann Arbor. So you'll be in the Big House, Western Michigan, taking on Michigan. I know the shirts say, "We back." Well, that's for the attendance in the stadium. I don't know if it's for the product on the football field, but can you tell me about the Wolverines this year?
Yeah, TBD. I feel like I'm kind of like stealing your whole like area, because I'm also with your old crew and Bob and Dan.
You're so lucky. Trust me, I'll give you some like food places to go. You need to go to Zingerman's. If you need a home cooked meal, head over to Chelsea.
Kind of stuff.
Dan eats like chicken fingers and ketchup. So take Bob. He'll eat anything.
Truthfully, I haven't had a chance to really dive too much into it because I was moonlighting as a tennis analyst yesterday for like a hot minute.
Which we need to talk about at the end of this episode, everybody. Yes. Like, imagine you sign up for a job as a reporter and find out when you show up that you're going to be the analyst. That's the tease. That's all I'm going to say. And we'll talk about it at the end of this episode.
Yeah. So I'm a little late to the prep. Also some essays.
And wait, Chris, I'm going to interrupt you. Let me redirect that question, because this is your first time dealing with Harbaugh, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how are you going to prepare and approach our boy, Jimmy?
Well, we've already asked for an on-cam interview. That doesn't seem like it will be happening.
I don't know. I think we're going to at least have meetings in person, so that will at least help, like, learn and him get to know me a little bit.
He's way better in person than on the phone. He's very, very, very difficult on the phone.
Week one, here's what I'm interested in Michigan, is they have revamped a lot of their coaching staff. They bring in Mike McDonald as the defensive coordinator. He's a 34-year-old guy. New running backs coach, Mike Hart, who used to play at Michigan. They have six coaches now who are 40 and under. So there's obviously like some sort of pull to change the culture there and change, like, you know, Harbaugh's not the most relatable guy in his khakis and his hoodie. So there's, you know, he's brought in some, you know, coaches that he hopes that these players connect with. And it does sound like there has been a change in culture. Aiden Hutchinson, who was like number two on Bruce Feldman's freak list and was supposed to be like a first round draft pick, he even said like there's a noticeable difference in the locker room. So, you know, we'll see if I get to talk to some players. Hopefully I can ask about it. The thing is up front, like they need to stick with the quarterback in Cade McNamara, who they announced yesterday is going to lead them. But they need to find a running back and just stick with them instead of like this, you know, we're just going to rotate. Well, that doesn't allow anyone to get in any sort of rhythm. And they've kind of done that for the last couple of years. And they have a lot of really good guys at running back. But when you start someone different every other week, in my opinion, that's not a formula for success. And how do you really build confidence in a guy when he starts one week and then he gets, you know, benched and doesn't come in until the second series next week. It'll be interesting to hear what Harbaugh has to say. They're already talking about Ohio State. This is the war. This is the year we win it.
Really? Who's talking about Ohio State? Michigan players?
They were all asked about it at media days.
Well, we know that. We know the fact that they're asked about it. That's one surefire way, by the way, to have Harbaugh like walk off camera in your one-on-one interview with him is like to open up by asking, is this the year you beat Ohio State? That's like the one way to get him. I've seen him leave meetings early, like production meetings. He's gotten up and left. That's a surefire way to get him to leave your meeting early too. So good luck with that, Chris.
Western Michigan just hired a new SID like 2 weeks ago. So we're a little behind on that side as well. So I'll get back to you next week on how this game goes.
I can't wait.
Don't you love that? It'll probably be your best game yet.
Exactly. So Molly, you're doing double duty this weekend. You have the Monday night game as well, right? And we've got Ole Miss and Louisville in that game. How has it been dealing with our boy Lane so far? And I love Satterfield at Louisville. Kind of give me a preview of that matchup.
If only you guys could see all the tabs open in my computer right now as I'm preparing for these two games. And, you know, I haven't been able to work. I ended last season early with, you know, having a baby, whatever. I am so excited to like get back out there, but oh my gosh, the preparation grind is real. Like I forgot about that part of it. So it's,
well, and you're juggling a small human too. Yeah. So,
right. That too. Different time management, new way of life. But, I've had some awesome conversations with players on both sides. I think that my favorite conversation that I had was with Louisville's quarterback, Malik Cunningham. And when you look at him, like he underratedly is like in the record books for some of the offensive records for Louisville as a quarterback. And he had such a productive season in 2019. And then 2020 last year, he was just so inconsistent. I think it was something like 11 turnovers. He threw interceptions, fumbled the ball a couple times. He just wasn't consistent, and you could tell he just wasn't himself last year. So I talked to him about that, and he said that, what did he say? I don't have the quote in front of me, but he said something to the effect of not a day goes by where I don't wake up and think about all of the things I did wrong last year. Like I wake up and I think about those 11 turnovers, and I think about all of those games we lost in the fourth quarter, and it haunts me. And so he wrote on his mirror in his room, he wrote 11 turnovers, like 6 or 7 games lost in the fourth quarter, 0-5 on the road. Those are all the things that Louisville did wrong last season and the ways that they failed. And he sees those as his failures. So I'm really excited to see him kind of try to take back the reins on this thing and try to bring Louisville back into, I don't know, I don't want to say national prominence because they haven't been since like Lamar Jackson left, really. But I just see a really hungry player and a guy who in the offseason was calling, you know, individual workouts with his receivers. He was with his receivers every single day trying to work out with them, trying to get better. Tutu Atwell and guys like that are gone. So he's trying to find that next guy up and who his main receiver is going to be. So I'm really excited to see that dynamic play out. And then of course you have Ole Miss. You talk about offense. that's one of the teams that always comes to mind in terms of the things that they do that are so interesting and so much fun to watch. I think that this game is going to be incredibly fun to watch. I don't know how much defense will be played in this game.
Can you get down to the bottom of how Lane Kiffin lost all of his weight?
Oh my gosh.
He went from like so five bad. Chins to one chin.
He definitely has one chin. I did a Zoom call with him the other day and there was only one chin present on the call. He looks really good. He said that, you know, he was talking to his players about needing to cut down and lose weight. And then he looked at pictures of himself, you know, during bowl season and was like, oh my God, I'm the one who needs to lose weight. I need to practice what I preach. And he said it was embarrassing. I love how brutally honest he is, especially about his own pitfalls. So he said that he only ate like lean meat and vegetables and worked out every day and cut out, you know, carbs and all of those fun things that we love to eat. I think he said it was just a really good combination of diet and exercise and staying committed to it. Like back to his playing days, like taking that seriously. And I think he said he's gotten some of his coordinators, like his offensive coordinator, Jeff Lebby, like he's gotten him to kind of buy into it too. So, and I think I either read this or we talked about it as a coaching staff, they have a weight loss competition to see like who can lose the most weight and be healthy. And so it's cool. It's like a health forward thing. So I'm happy for Lane. You know, with Lane, you're going to get honesty, brutal honesty, which is why we love to work with him. And you're going to get some surprises, right? So like, I'm excited to see what his surprises are on Monday night and what we see from Matt Corral and his offense. Matt Corral seems like a more mature leader this season. Their offense is so dynamic. The big question mark is their defense. And I think one player that I want to tell you guys about that I think will be someone to look out for is a guy in their secondary, Otis Reese, transferred from Georgia, I believe, and he wasn't cleared to play until the last three games of the season. So he was on their scout team, but he wasn't allowed to be on the sidelines for games when he wasn't cleared yet. So he watched all the games from the stands and he heard all the Ole Miss fans talking shit about their defense. So like, imagine that, how cool that he had that experience. He heard firsthand the disappointment from the fans, and now he's able to go out there and make a difference and actually do something about it. So he's like on one of their leadership committees. Transfer comes in. He's already a leader. I think he's a really dynamic guy. So I'm excited to see what he's able to do. And that's a cool story that I'm excited to tell. But I think it'll be a really fun, exciting, fast-paced game on Monday night. I'm so pumped about that one as well.
It'll be such a good way to kind of cap off week one, Monday night in Atlanta. Another game I'm super interested in is the UCLA-LSU game. Like, I feel like that's a sneaky good game that maybe isn't getting the pub it deserves. I don't know. I have a feeling that's going to be more competitive than people realize. Obviously, LSU leading up to this, dealing with everything going on and having to relocate because of the hurricane and all that. But that's another game that I definitely will be watching this weekend, which is all I'll be doing this weekend. So just to address the elephant in the room, I am not working week one, probably not working week two either for ESPN on the sidelines for college football. To say I'm disappointed is probably a huge understatement. It's not been easy, but there are some things that are precluding me from being out there. And I'm going to leave it at that. I'll have more for you guys when I can, probably on like a future episode, and we can dive into whatever I can reveal kind of as to why. So I'm super bummed. It's going to be a hard weekend for sure, but I can't wait to watch you two shine on the sidelines of your games. I will be flipping through channels incessantly all day. I'm probably going to have to get a sitter for my son or something because he's definitely going to not get any attention this weekend. But I'll be locked in, and I hope to stay connected to the sport throughout this season here with you two. And so we'll leave it at that. I'm bummed, but I won't be out there, but I will be there in spirit and cheering you guys on from home.
Well, we love you so much, and you will be with us every either Tuesday or Monday or whenever we take this dang thing, because I love seeing your face and Molly's face every week.
So. Yes, and it'll be
a different
perspective, being able to actually like watch all the teams and games instead of just locking in on a few. So I definitely will still be dialed in and can't wait to kind of hear your experiences week in and week out, and we might have to get a sponsor for this thing now.
Yeah, you can. You'll essentially be our analyst, Allison. You're gonna like be our analyst on this. You're actually gonna be able to watch all of these games. That's the hard part about Saturdays leading up to the game. You're spending like 6 hours on the field. You miss a ton of action on a college football Saturday. So that's, you know, we're lucky to have you, and we love you so much, and we are so supportive of you. And you bet your ass, our group text is going to be fire, because like when I was sidelined and not working, I was literally the most annoying person ever on text. And I expect you to do the same.
You got it. You got it. All right. So before we wrap things up, do we want to do just a couple rapid fire random questions that we get? Just kind of the things people want to know that are super random that go with being a sideline reporter. Let's start with, favorite pregame snack. I have a feeling this is universal. PB&J, right? Is there anything else? A banana maybe? But definitely PB&J, right?
PB&J, hands down.
Are the Uncrustables, so that like you don't have to make them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Those are
that's usually pregame or halftime for me is like a PB&J, or even this is a weird one, but last year I got into chicken soup in a coffee cup. And I would sip it like it was coffee, but I'd always feel self-conscious that I had like chicken breath. So, so that's one of the ones that like is really good for a cold game, but it makes you think twice about it. I don't know, whatever. Okay. So that's a good one. PB&J I think is like pretty normal. I want to ask about any wardrobe fails you guys have had, because I'm heading to Atlanta to Mercedes-Benz for these games. And I just found out today that
it's open.
The roof is going to be open. Yeah. Which I should have known. I thought, oh, I'm in a climate controlled environment. I can bring whatever and wear whatever. No, the dome is going to be open. Our game's at 3:30 Eastern. I'm going to be sweating my balls off. I don't even have balls, and they're going to be sweated off of my body. Like, it's going to be uncomfortable how hot and sweaty and puffy my hair is and things like that. So that could be one of my wardrobe fail situations. Have you guys had anything like that?
Yeah. So, which first of all, I looked at the weather in Ann Arbor. It's in the 70s, which I'm like, yes.
That's ideal.
I had a wardrobe fail at Omaha this past year. I wore a dress. Like, I usually wear just a dress and sneakers all because it's hot there. And I didn't realize the dress I had was very flowy and light. So any gust of wind went until after my open, where I was like hands, like trying to keep it down. I was doing two games. I had to like race back in between games to change clothes because I had nearly flashed all on TV in my entry.
I had that happen a lot with baseball, because you were always trying to wear something cool. So you would try to do dresses and it would look like, oh, this won't blow. And then it would, like, I would often do fashion double-sided tape on my legs.
That's smart.
Keep it down. That, and then usually I feel like I have shoe fails, because before like sneakers were cool, you would wear booties and different shoes that were just not conducive to being on your feet for 5-6 hours at a time. And my feet would just be killing me, and I would have blisters everywhere. And the one time I've actually had to like change my shoes at the half, but that was because it was so cold. I had warm boots on the truck, and so I would just like switch out my boots because I couldn't feel my feet.
So one thing that's smart. People don't realize is we're not allowed to wear open-toed shoes. So you can't wear flip-flops on the sidelines. And I didn't know this when I did my first ESPN game, and I was wearing like cute sandals, but they were open-toed. And I walked into the truck, and whoever the ops manager was ripped out a new one. Since I have Harbaugh this week, it's a fitting question. What are your worst interview moments?
Mine was with Harbaugh. I'm really sorry to say that. I was thinking about like worst interviews I've done. I did an interview for remember the Michigan-Utah game years back, and it was a big deal. Michigan, I think, was at Utah. Big 10, Pac-12, it was just like, I forget, that game was a big deal. I remember I was at Fox at the time, and all the bosses flew out for this game. And so I'm like, okay, you know what? Harbaugh hasn't told us who his quarterback is, but I'm going to get it. Like, I'm determined. I'm going to get the scoop so that right before kickoff, I can tell America who the starting quarterback is going to be. And so I interview him before the game. And I ask him in a very, like, in a convoluted way. It's like, I'm asking you this question, and I force him into an answer. And he literally just looks at me and goes, I'm not going to tell you that. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then I tried again to ask him right before my open hit. Literally, we were live on the air. Coach had just run out. You know that anxiety. You're like, they're coming to me in 2 minutes right after the break. And I need to have some kind of report to tell, you know, the booth who the quarterback is going to be. And I'm depending on this last minute information. And so I'm like running up to Harbaugh as we're on the air. I pop my earpiece out and I'm like, Coach, like, you know, if you could please let me know, this isn't something that will be released to anyone. Like, it'll be as your quarterback's running out on the field. Can you just tell me who's starting and why? Like, what you like about this person that leads you to make them the starter? And he looks at me and he says, I'm going to walk away now. And he walked away. So my report was, well, guys, the news is there's no news. I have nothing. That was my report. I was literally like, I just spoke with Jim Harbaugh and he gave me nothing. I don't know who the quarterback is. So let's see who walks onto the field.
Oh, I've had it was brutal with him too. I had to chase him down at Michigan State and they rolled in the footage of me sprinting across the field after him. And then, you know, I remember I had him in the Orange Bowl of the Florida State Michigan game and I was doing radio and he was great at the half. So that's the thing that's tough with Harbaugh is he's wildly inconsistent. Like sometimes he will give you exactly what you need and sometimes he will do exactly what he did. I think one of my worst interviews, I've had a lot of them, but probably the most memorable one was when I was with CSS back in the day and Mark Richt was still at Georgia. I don't even remember who they were playing. I want to say it was Kentucky. And they were up big in the first half. And then their opponent, Kentucky or whomever, started to go on a run towards the end of the half and had really kind of seized the momentum of the game. And I asked him about that at the half and he like snapped at me and goes, it's halftime. There isn't any momentum. It's the half. And I was like,
okay, thanks.
Sweet. Good talk, dude.
So Mark Richt did that to me too. God love him. But it was at an Orange Bowl, Allison, and I asked him something about his defense, like what was wrong.
I remember this, yeah.
It was something, some very open-ended, like, Coach, what frustrated you most, or what did your defense not do well? And he literally goes, watch the tape, and then ran away. And ran away. Oh, it was brutal. I still have a screenshot of the look on my face on my phone, just to keep myself humble.
He was one of those guys, doesn't have a bad reputation for being short.
Difficult. Yeah.
Yeah. But you would catch him at the wrong time. And yeah, he definitely was.
That's what mine was Mark Richt at Miami. And he didn't want to do the halftime interview. And I'm like trying as we're walking into like I'm there with the camera trying to convince him while they're waiting to toss to me. And as they toss to me, I'm like in the middle of, oh, come on, we're going to start right now. And he's like, I'm not doing it. And then I'm like, we're on. What I even asked, because I was like, how much of that actually made air? And then I would just ask one question and walked off.
I had a terrible one with Bill Snyder too. Kansas was playing at Miami and tried to walk and talk with him at the same time. And he wouldn't answer anything. It was horrible. I love that none of us said Mike Leach though. Go figure.
I've had a couple bad ones with him. Bad ones with Mike Leach, but
I saw my face pregnant trying to catch up with him.
That's true. All right, and we got to wrap this up, but Chris, give us the lowdown on what happened with your U.S. Open preview show that you handled so beautifully as the analyst for. What the heck was going on?
So I get a text and an opportunity to do like a digital pre-U.S. Open show for yesterday. 30 minutes on the app, Facebook, Twitter. And that's all I knew. And then, so I was like, okay, well, I'm going to be hosting this with, I have no idea, that's all. And I looked at the people on the email, and it's like Christine Williamson was on there, who, if you don't know, she's the bald girl on Twitter. She hosts our College Game Day digital stuff. And she's wonderful. But in my mind, I'm like, oh, she must have played tennis growing up. And then I looked at the rundown, and she's asking me the questions. Which, I mean, listen, like, tennis is on at our house 24/7 anyways. Like, I know more about tennis than all other sports combined just because of my family and because it's on all the time. So I had all the answers to these things. I did get some, like, my husband was like, here, I'll help you with some stuff if you help me with my college pick-ups link. And so I was like, deal. But it went really well. And it was fun to be able to, like, give your opinion. You're like, be yourself, be opinionated, tell us what you want. And that's so opposite of like the role that we're really allowed to have.
You and Chris Fowler doing the tennis, the football. I mean, come on. That's pretty impressive. I love it.
It was fun for moonlighting for 30 minutes, but now it's back to football. And maybe next week I'll have a horrible interview story to share with you.
Oh, we're definitely going to have some stories from week one. That's for damn sure. And Allison, I know you're going to be watching all the games. You'll be able to tell us about all the like funny, awkward, incredible moments that we missed as well. And I feel like, I don't know, covering a team like Alabama and covering a coach like Lane Kiffin with Ole Miss, I'm going to have some stories for you guys for sure. So I'm excited to talk about it and catch up with you guys next week.
All right, everybody, enjoy week one of college football. We'll check back with you guys next week. Thanks for tuning in.